Welcome to Black Chicks Bible Study. Yeah, I just am going to mention, I kept saying last time that we're recording digitally, which doesn't make sense because every recording is digital. But what I mean is we're recording virtually over Zoom, and this is another one of those.
Stay-at-home orders.
Yes, this is episode 47. 2 Corinthians. So it's another letter written by Paul to the Corinthian church, but it is not the second time he's ever written them because he'll kind of reference a letter or two in between.
Some people say it could be two letters, like they say from verses 1 to whatever or something.
Oh, so they smush together two different letters?
Because if you read it too, it does almost seem like that, because it's like it goes from him being kind of like still nice, and then all of a sudden it's like very harsh.
So
like,
yeah, maybe he just had a dramatic mood shift in between.
As well.
Do you want to go into our words of faith?
Do you want to start?
Sure. So mine was focus on my gifts more,
right.
Spread more love, and try to focus on what I can offer to people, you know, ongoing struggle. One thing I can, I guess, well, Thanksgiving was great. First of all, that was nice. I felt useful during Thanksgiving, being able to just cook. One thing that made me really happy was in that like weekly virtual group that I go to, the quiet contemplation thing, we were talking about like gratitude recently and things that we're trying to like be more grateful for. One of mine was like my disposition, being one of the 20% of people who are highly sensitive. It's a whole category of people. I'm sure I've mentioned this before. Bringing that like kind of book recommendation to the group and then seeing them like get really excited about it and checking out the book and stuff. Us talking about it, I was like, yeah, it's like an example of one thing that I can consider a gift, not a curse so much, just sharing that thing about myself and a resource about it, and then having them identify and like want to look into it. I was like, oh, that's, you know, if I hadn't shared that, it wouldn't have been, you know, it was good to contribute something, it felt like. Yesterday, though, I guess I reached out to a friend when I otherwise wouldn't have, but I was trying to. I was like, let me just share my vulnerability right now, because I got a rejection letter from something that I'd entered, a writing program that I'd entered this year. And I was like, I don't know how I feel. Like, I kind of enter these things like thinking it won't work out, but then still any rejection that I get is still like hard, you know? So I just like screenshotted it and sent it to someone and got a bunch of like encouragement and reality checks in response, and it made me feel a lot better. But I was like, you know, my sensitivity and my vulnerability are not necessarily like bad. Yeah, and I even let myself cry for a while, but it wasn't just about that. It was like other stuff too, where normally I like try not to get too emotional, but I was like, you know what, let me feel my feelings. And oddly, it like put me in a better mood for the rest of the day, because I was like, I'm just being myself. I can, you know, cry and be emotional, and that's a gift to have feelings, you know. Anyway, what about you? What was your word of faith?
First part was about not getting too comfortable, like, and I think with that, you know, it's more just not taking things for granted, I guess, or being like, okay, well, now I'm in a better position. And I will say, like, life kind of kicked me in the ass with that too. It made me realize that I'm not very comfortable. I ran into some uncomfortable living stuff that I have to deal with right now. So that's, you know, life did that for me. And then the other part was about honing in on like a hobby or a craft and like being patient and actually working on it. Cause like, for the most part, it's like, I just expect to do stuff right away and not necessarily, you know, jump in from the beginning and take the time to actually learn. It's like, okay, I'm going to start with the hardest stencil. And if it doesn't come out perfect, then I'm just like, oh, well, I guess that's not my skill. So, you know, really just trying to learn something from the beginning. And like, I kind of didn't have time to focus on that as I wanted to. Like, I wanted to do something more creative. I didn't really do that. Did at least start getting on my pull-up bar again. So just in that time, I'm like almost able to do a full pull-up. So that's nice, you know, and eventually I would like to be able to do, you know, different positions and different reps. I can pretty much almost do a whole one.
Yeah, that's a skill for sure.
Yeah, I could barely get up today. So that was great. So yeah, I did work on that, but I want to focus more on that, continue to focus more on that. Cause like I said, I kind of wanted to hone in on something more creative. So I think I'm going to try to get back to stenciling. Like I need a printer though. Like when I first got into it, I did do some beginner tutorials where you're just literally using an X-Acto knife to cut out simple, you know, lines where, you know, the simple shit, you know, getting comfortable doing that. So I want to get a printer so I can do that again. Anyways, but that was, yeah, I think that was pretty much my takeaways. Yeah, I feel like it's the same with this week. I felt like last week I didn't really love Corinthians. Just overall, like initially, I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but it also just felt like this was like the first time too where I really was like, Paul sounds like an asshole.
That did kind of come through, especially toward the end. He's like really taking his position as their spiritual authority.
Yeah, I just felt like I just felt like he got so far away from whatever he was trying to do in the beginning, and I was not feeling it. I was like, who are you? Not Paul, I know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah. You want to dive into chapter one?
Yeah.
I like how he kind of starts out with a Thanksgiving after affliction is what this calls it. Calling God the Father of mercies and God of all consolation, who consoles us in all of our affliction so that we may be able to console those who are in any affliction. Yeah, talking about the suffering of Christ being alive in them. You know, as always, that kind of thing speaks to me about being grateful for the suffering to help you connect with others better or
empathetic.
Yeah, exactly. Like breeding more empathy in them. You know, if the Christians are being persecuted at this time for what they believe, they can still thank their creator in that because it's going to help them be more effective. Because a lot of this book does feel like it's about suffering and affliction and he's reminding them how much he's gone through, and but saying like, no matter what, in the depths of grief, you still keep your gratitude.
I did like that too. And just also the idea that like through those connections too, just that it's also like a God, like it doesn't have to necessarily be this direct thing with God too. Like it's still God, you know, kind of like by us being empathetic towards each other, or caring for each other or consoling each other. It's as if God is doing it himself kind of thing. Even if kind of like that transfer of, I guess, consolation, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
In verse 9, where he says, indeed, we felt we have received the sentence of death, but this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. I feel like that's so important too, and it's so human. Just that idea that like we get so low, or we're in such a place where we surely know that we are not going to save, right? Like nothing could possibly help us except for something else. You know?
Yeah. We're at the mercy of like, yeah, the grace of whatever can save us. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I just remembered when I mentioned like crying yesterday, it was while I was prepping and reading this. So that might be why it resonated more, because I was going through other stuff that like was making me emotional. So reading all of this about suffering and like grace and all that, I was like, yeah, like crying, like bawling, but in a cathartic way where it felt really encouraging.
I also like where he says, he's talking to them and he says, for we do not write you anything you cannot read or understand. And I hope that as you have understood us in part, we will come to understand fully that you can boast of us just as we will boast of you in the day of the Lord Jesus. Kind of thought that was interesting because for two reasons. Like for one, I liked it because I felt like, okay, like we're all part of this church, or we're all part of it. Like you, anything I'm saying to you, you should understand, you should get, like, you know, it's like as if someone in a science club is writing to another. Like if you are a biologist, you should understand, you know what I mean? But then I also like the fact that it's almost like a barter thing too, because where he says like, you know, I hope that as you have understood in your part, you will come to understand fully that you can boast of us just as we have. So he's also like, take my words and read them, but also I hope you're reading them in a way that this is what happens. Like, because if you're reading it correctly, then you will be able to say good things about me just as I have said good things about you. Like,
yeah,
it's weird. Like, and I felt like he did that a lot, and this is also why I didn't, almost like a very like a manipulation type word.
I liked it though. I loved all that, like pressing them to be accountable, because if he's been working and being persecuted for so long, also not asking to be paid by this church, and like he's so big on like being self-sacrificing and doing this spiritual work for them with it's like a thankless job. Mm-hmm. But I do like that, like he wants them to feel convicted, because they should.
Right.
I don't know. It was a delicate balance, because like he comes off like a jerk, but also I appreciated that, because all of the stuff he's saying I think is good for them. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, man, if only they would get it together. That was like how
I don't know
how I was reading it, like they're children or something.
I felt like it was like kind of pushy, and it made us like he didn't have faith, like he's trying to solicit a certain outcome. And it's just like, and if you are this godly person with this, you know, word from God and this trust in what you're doing, and I feel like you wouldn't be going so hard right now. Like you would just.
Right. Let it go. Let it happen.
Yeah, just let it happen.
Well, apparently they've been wayward. I wish we had whatever visit he referred to between the first and second Corinthians. Like, I wish we had more info on that. Like, I want to know how rogue they went.
From what I read, apparently there was the other guy. I think he mentions him too at some point, but there's this other, I guess, apostle. And apparently there was like the last time he came, there was kind of this like big riff or something where a lot of people were following this guy. So they weren't as welcoming to Paul and like he felt outcast or something. And that's kind of why he left. And so that's why he's like apologizing for not coming, you know, and all this. Apparently, I don't know, from what I read, there was some, I guess, big altercation or something that even maybe went to the law or something when he came up that had to do with him and this other apostle. And so he did also just didn't know how well he would be received if he did come
back. I like that in the end, we'll get there, but in the end how he mentions being jealous, at least he's like coming clean with his own human emotions, I guess.
Very true.
Chapter 2.
I like the first part where he says, "So I made up my mind that I would not make another painful visit to you. For if I grieve you, who is left to make me glad but you whom I've grieved? I wrote it so that when I came, I would not be distressed by those who have made me rejoice. I had confidence in all of you that you would all share my joy." I don't know. I kind of like that preemptive thing too, where he's like, you know, I'm not just trying to pop up there and come, you know, unknowingly and walk into whatever waters I'm walking into, but more of a, like, he wants to know too that, you know, he's kind of making the effort to be like, I'm coming there. Like, I love you people, you know, and whatever, like, I'm coming with an open heart and I hope that you guys are there to receive it, kind of. The idea too that, like, he just didn't want to be anywhere he's not welcome, kind of, like, I didn't want that disappointed, you know, like, I just felt like that was that would be a very hard thing to be hurt again, like whatever happened last time, I guess, you know, he probably felt his people turned on him, and I'm sure it was a very painful thing, and just him being honest about how much, you know, the last visit hurt him, I guess, I just found that, like, very raw, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, especially in verse 4, talking about the last time he wrote to them, "I wrote to you out of much distress and anguish of heart and with many tears, not to cause you pain, but to let you know the abundant love that I have for you." That could, you know, also be read as a little bit of manipulation of like, I was so emotional when I...
Yeah, I just loved you so much, it hurt me.
Yeah. Why do you make me hurt so bad? All I want to do is love you. But then he gets to kind of come out looking like the bigger person all the time, like the forgiveness for the offender part, saying if anyone has caused pain, he has caused it not to me, but to some extent to all of you. Now instead, you should forgive and console him so that he may not be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. So I urge you to reaffirm your love for him. I liked in verse 11, "And we do this so that we may not be outwitted by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his designs." Even though I don't like believe in Satan, I see why it's like super useful to concentrate all of the evil and darkness of the world into this one figure who has designs on deceiving people, because it is kind of like there is this like dark void of everything bad that is constantly a threat. It can make you forget, make you not see the light of life. Just reading that for some reason like was super, oh my gosh, super emotional and powerful, because to be outwitted by Satan or to have something like cleverly take you away from your faith, yeah, that's pretty dark. So he's saying like even people who hurt you, you have to love, just keep sending out love. Otherwise, you're going to be convinced over time that the darkness is the right path, you know? Yeah, it's like we've talked about so many times in these books of like that darkness can pull you down to its level if you don't counter it with light, with something else.
I had one more thing in this chapter. I don't know if you have anything else.
Just 15 and 16.
Yeah, I see.
No, really? Go for it.
15, "For we are to God the pleasing aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. To the one we are an aroma that brings death, to the other an aroma that brings life. And who is equal to such a task?" I thought that was good, because I don't know, I've actually literally sometimes feel like I have smelled death like on people. So just the fact that like he's likening this like inner being of good or bad to like being able to be sniffed, literally like sniffed out, because I myself feel like I smelled, and they even say dogs sometimes can smell like sickness in people and things like that. So
yep,
the people people who believe in God and that, you know, they're bringing life, like it's eternal, they're going to be saved while everyone else is kind of smelling of this stuff because they're giving in to Satan and the other worldly things. So it's interesting because it's like, if, you know, what the Bible says is true, then yeah, you know, their time is coming to an end. So it's like, you know, they smell like death.
Yeah. Earlier when he's talking about the body of Christ, like embodying the death of Christ and the life of Christ, it's like all of it together. And those who are perishing smell the death and those who are living smell the life. The way mine is worded, to the one a fragrance from death, to the other a fragrance from life to life. So in both cases, they're emanating death and life. And it's like people can choose which one to receive, like what to take in.
Interesting, yeah.
Chapter 3, going back into a letter, you are a letter of Christ, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. Another reminder.
I was reading, I guess, too, I think maybe at this time, people were getting certificates for church or, you know, written accolades and stuff. That was one of the maybe issues or qualms, or maybe his last visit, that was something that was a sore spot maybe too. So I just also think, like, nice of him to be like, you know, like in the big picture thing, like this little piece of paper, like, is that what you think is meaningful in the grand scheme of things, a paper that's like what we're about, like that bigger than that, you know, it's on your heart. Yeah. You don't need to be validated by this piece of paper or whatever.
Yeah, mine says letters of recommendation. He's saying they don't need them from each other, right, like other churches do. When he's saying, like, verses 4 and 5, such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God, not that we are competent of ourselves to claim anything as coming from us. Our competence is from God. Oh, yeah. And he says, for the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. And it reminded me of when he was writing before about, I didn't even know what sin was until I read the Old Testament and read these laws written down, and then I felt convicted and it felt awful. And so that just reminded me of that, of like contrasting the written word versus like the word of the Spirit and the words on their heart. But it was reassuring to me too, when I think about trying to become a better writer and become a better channel for creativity, it always helps to remember that I am not demonstrating my own skill and competence and talent so much as I'm trying to do right by this like objective thing that is bigger than me. And whenever you're in the zone of doing anything, like when you play music and it's really transcendent and people talk about, oh, I'm just the vessel and it's like going through me, and I'm like, that's the best feeling when you know it's not all you, it's something like that you're tapping into. Reading that in that moment was just so like reassuring of like, oh yeah, I don't have to always like lean on my own capabilities or whatever. It really is about tapping into the Spirit, like something bigger.
I need to tap into that.
Yeah, we all do. It's really hard. It's an ongoing struggle, especially, you know, we live in a society. There's so much standing in the way of that. Everything that we admire that's like transcendent and life-giving comes from another source. It's not, you know, just us originating it.
I like when he compares like people to the Israelites, like back in the day when Moses had, he says like Moses had a veil over, you know.
Oh yeah, a veil over his face.
Mm-hmm. And then I liked in 16 where he says, but whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. So it's like the idea that like kind of the same as being born again. I don't know, like once you open up to Jesus or whatever, except Jesus, like all of a sudden you see new, you know, it's like a whole new world out there. They're just like that kind of imagery.
The third eye being opened, I guess, is my understanding, is the same thing, like when your eyes are open to the imperceptible or whatever, and it's like a switch being turned on.
Yeah.
It's funny too, though, how he has this like rivalry with Moses, kind of. He's always bringing up, you know, everything Moses wrote was so dead and gone. And now we're to understand that when Moses is read, a veil lies over their minds. So it's like, I mean, at the time, those Moses writings were the closest thing they had to communication with God. So it's just funny that he keeps asserting this new era as like so much more valid in every way.
Right.
Those foundational teachings.
We're in the dark ages.
Yeah. What about chapter 4? I guess this is where, did you ever hear about the band Jars of Clay? They're a Christian band.
I did know them.
I remember having friends in college who like weren't Christian, but they were like, I met people who were also fans of Jars of Clay, even though they weren't Christian, just because they were so good, their music.
How Creed was, I feel like.
Yeah. But in verse 7, but we have this treasure in clay jars so that it may be made clear that this extraordinary power belongs to God and does not come from us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying in the body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be made visible in our bodies. Again, another reference to life and death in the body and that their light and connection to God and Christ are kind of protected in jars of clay. It's a treasure. I love that.
I like that part because it sounded like a locker room speech to me.
Like a pep talk kind of?
Broken, but still breathing. And I think that's why I also had the last part too, because it also, same thing, it was very inspiring to me, like, keep on going. He says, like, therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. And momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. You know, like how they say, like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, it's like, yeah, you're beaten down, all of this stuff, but like, you're still alive. Like, clearly all of this suffering is building you for something, gonna, you know, give you something so much better, or you know, it'll be worth it when you realize why.
I keep seeing that meme. I think I've said it on this before, but I didn't get this far to only get this far. Like, the more you've been through, the less incentive you have to just stagnate. Because, like, you want to keep moving through the hell and into better days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 5?
I kind of liked verse 6 because it's like, therefore, we are always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. Just that whole idea of, like, you know, when people die, you're like, they're going home or homecoming service, you know, like, this isn't it. You know, it's like, after this, we're going to go back to our maker or go back wherever it is we belong or really, you know, understand. I don't know. I just like that idea, thinking that, like, as long as we're on this earth, like, it's temporary, basically.
Passing through.
Yeah.
Which is really true because
it is.
And any of us are only alive for, like, a blink, for, like, a fraction of a second compared to eternity.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, like, I know when I was deconverting, I was so resentful about the amount of time I had spent believing in heaven and stuff. Cause I was like, man, like, earth is just one giant audition or waiting room for something that, you know, for our eternal, like, if I'm gonna be conscious forever in eternity and I'm just here to, like, audition for that time, it's such a crock. But now I kind of feel comforted. I don't want to be conscious after death. That would be awful, even if it were paradise, you know? But
how do you know?
Just because, like, I guess the only experience I have of consciousness is, like, I get breaks from it now. I get to sleep.
Maybe you get to sleep in paradise. What if you got to sleep permanently?
That's what I think death is. thankfully, just think about what it was like before I was born. You know, the world was still here. I just wasn't part of it. And that's, like, one way I get to have peace now is, like, I finally don't want to die right now. That's, like, new for me that I don't always want to die. But I do have a lot more peace with the idea of it because I'm like, oh, then I'll be back into the earth and I'll be soil and at least I'll be useful then and I won't have to be up for it. Like, I won't have to be awake for it. This is just such a temporary thing. I should really, really enjoy being here. So I don't know. It's just reassuring to think about how temporary this life is. But yeah, I wouldn't be excited to wake up after death.
Maybe you won't wake up. You'll just be that soil.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole idea of we walk by faith, not by sight, especially if people are not living on top of the world and we're not super prosperous and fulfilled in life, it does always help to think, like, beyond whatever your immediate circumstances are. Whatever's in your sight, you can always imagine and innovate bigger things for yourself. So that idea of walking by faith, always appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I like verse 13 where he says, if we are out of our mind, in quotes, because I guess people were calling them out of their mind, it is for God. If we are in our right mind, then it's for you. Growing up, maybe getting, I got this from my mother. It was just this idea that, like, you never know who you're talking to, or, like, you know, the crazy person on the street, like, you have no idea. So it's like you look at someone and you're like, you're out of your mind, but it could be like the most sane person. You know, they just are more tapped in than the rest of us idiots walking around, you know? When you are so passionate about something, you've gone mad. Like, it's like a manic, you're a maniac. And people will look at you like you're crazy, and it's like, okay, cool, but if you don't want me to be crazy, then I'm just living for you, you know, instead of living for myself.
So. Yeah, and he's saying here too, like, when these apostles he's speaking on behalf of, he's saying whenever we look put together and okay, we're doing that so that you can brag about us in front of people who care about that kind of thing. We're giving you an opportunity to boast about us so that you may be able to answer those who boast in outward appearance and not in the heart. So, like, basically, if he were just living like the man of God that he is, you'd be okay walking around looking crazy and unkempt or whatever. But because they have to answer to other people, they're going to care about their outward appearance, which is great. It goes along with that thing of fitting in wherever he is, like trying to kind of conform in order to spread the gospel. If I have to wear a suit to church, I'll wear a suit to church. Just so you won't be embarrassed and we'll look good for you. But it's for you. God only cares about the heart.
Right.
Ooh, I loved 16. And I feel like 17 is a really iconic verse. From now on, therefore, we regard no one from a human point of view, even though we once knew Christ from a human point of view. We know him no longer in that way. So if anyone is in Christ, there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. See, everything has become new.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty well known. But I do like this too, because Christ was just one of us walking around here. He was the seed. But now we're immortalizing him. He was just this guy, but no more. Now he's the Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I do like that idea of, like, we regard no one from a human point of view. Just seeing people as, like, bigger than their just their meat suit. Spiritual people sometimes, I guess, use that phrase, like, we are wearing suits of meat, that humans are spiritual beings and the bodies we're carrying around are just like.
Why did Gaga wear that meat?
Yeah, I guess she was trying to comment on being treated like a piece of meat by the music industry, which is also very valid. I don't know, I kind of like that idea of, like, regarding no one from a human point of view. Like, it's important to remember our shared humanity and fallibility and all that, but we're all one thing that has been, like, split up into these various tiny things, but really
one big ball of energy.
Yeah, exactly. And their plan, their whole reason for being, spreading this good news and this gospel and this energy and light to increase thanksgiving, as he said earlier, like working in this service of that bigger spirit. To me, thinking of it that way is like more rewarding than working for individual humans, I guess, working toward the wellness of the collective overall.
I think that's what we all should do.
Chapter 6, he goes into how persecuted they are again, and just, we've commended ourselves in every way. In verse 4, through great endurance in afflictions, hardships, calamities, and goes into like beatings, imprisonment, all that. But they have weapons of righteousness. So in honor and dishonor, in ill repute and good repute. So I always like that of, like, even if your society is denigrating you, you're answering to righteousness, and you'll do that whether or not you're regarded well. Kind of like Christ. If you're going to follow his model of living, yeah, you might not live past your 30s. Like, you might, like, he died. He wasn't accepted at all by the status quo. So he technically had a bad reputation among the people who were in power. So that's a little bit convicting to me too, of like, why would I care so much about my reputation among people that I don't respect? Or, you know, what did you think about verse 14? Do not be mismatched with unbelievers, for what partnership is there between righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship is there between light and darkness?
Yes, I had that highlighted because, yeah, that whole uneven yoke thing, which is interesting because he was singing a very different tune last letters. Because he said, marry whoever, because he's a partner. Yeah, I thought that was interesting because he literally said the opposite.
Yeah. I don't know. I could see both being true in different circumstances, but ideally, maybe you wouldn't find fellowship if people are really married to the darkness, lawlessness. Maybe they're beyond your ability to be there.
Maybe there's levels too.
Yeah, exactly. There might be levels to it.
Well, maybe it's okay to marry, but maybe when he says yoke together, he means something else. I don't know. Truth in all things, huh?
Yeah, but it is something we... I feel like we hear a lot about in our culture of people, like, again, it can definitely turn into toxic positivity. Good vibes only, like, stay, keep your, like, it is annoying, but I get the spirit behind it of, like, don't introduce negativity. Like, I get that, like, in your life, you're going to have to start pruning the dead leaves, and sometimes you have to not commune with people who are, yeah, but again, it's levels. What about chapter 7?
I guess. You know, he's talking about how he went to Macedonia or whatever, and he was getting harassed there, but then he was comforted by this guy, Titus, who showed up, and Titus, I guess, was telling him how much the Corinthians missed him so much, they were worried about him, so he's, like, now being like, you know, I heard how much you guys missed me, and that made me so happy, that's, like, how I survived through all these hardships, hearing about that, and I felt like that was another little bit of a manipulation. I just felt like he's, like,
Must really kind of resent them. He thinks they're in some kind of bubble of ignorance and privilege.
Yeah, it seems like he thinks they're, like, out of all the churches, I'm getting this idea that he feels like they are too on themselves or living on their own. Like, they're not thinking about all the other people that aren't in the same position as them, basically.
Yeah.
I had 12 highlighted. It says, so even though I wrote to you, it was neither on account of the one who did the wrong, nor on account of the injured party, but rather that before God, you could see for yourselves how devoted to us you are. I don't know. There's something missing to the story, I guess, that we don't really, but whatever letter he wrote or whatever he's talking about. I don't know. I kind of just like that he sounds like he's trying to take, like, a neutral stance, basically, and just, you know, saying, like, you know, like he's trying to let them know, like, I wasn't trying to point fingers kind of thing, but rather that, you know, before God, you could see for yourselves how devoted you are to us. And I don't want to say it was a test, but just kind of like, I took it as him saying maybe, like, I just reported the facts, or maybe I just said what I said. And, you know, I know it might not have been the nicest words or comforting for you, but, like, but that also goes to show how much faith, you know, you have in us, or what we're saying.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, or I don't know.
They got themselves in trouble. They were acting up somehow, having dissent within their church. And he's saying, like, use your grief for good. Like in 11, he's like, for see what earnestness this godly grief has produced in you. What eagerness to clear yourselves. What indignation, what alarm, what longing, zeal, punishment. So all these things that, like, are being dug up from within them and making themselves known, like the longing, all of that, like it can be cathartic and, like, beautiful to purge all of these emotions as you're grieving, feeling convicted about your wrongs. And he's saying, like, I and your other leaders, like, came in to reflect that and to make you feel even more convicted and show our neutrality and our love for the church. And that's really lovely that he's, like, trying to get them to use even their punishment and their guilt as something that can make them more holy. Like, I didn't come here to take sides or create more division. It's more about showing you all how you can, like, heal and trust us more, you know?
And I feel like it was a little bit of a, like, almost like if the shoe fits, like if you felt, you know,
right
about this, then that's maybe that's what you need to look at, like in your heart. If you felt like I was saying you're wrong or condemning, then maybe that's because you feel guilty about something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like being a mirror. That's what any good, if you think about a guru walking in and just staring at you for hours, I bet you would eventually just be crying in their face, like, because everything in you is going to come up.
Anyone stared at me. Fucking looking at me, please.
But after that initial confusion and annoyance, maybe you would just be crying and emotional or something, and that person would be your guru in that moment. I'm going to try it one day. I'm just going to stop by and stare you in the eye for a while. Chapter 8.
So this is funny. I felt this is what it all led up. This is why I felt like it was manipulation, because it all led up to this. But he basically is saying how the people in Macedonia were very, very generous to him. Then kind of goes in to start asking them for donations. Yes, they should also be very, I'm just letting you know, these people were very generous. You don't have to give what they give, but, you know, just letting you know that they were very generous. You know, you guys can give whatever you feel comfortable giving so that all the churches everywhere can be, you know, as well off as, you know, he wasn't asking for a specific amount, but it was more of a, like, you guys are doing well. And if you have extra, and I know you have extra, why not give it to us so we can spread it around?
Yeah, he really hammers in how poor the Macedonians were.
Still very generous, even though
their extreme poverty and their abundant joy have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. And then goes on to flatter the Corinthians of, like, mm-hmm. you guys, you excel in everything,
right,
in faith and speech and knowledge and utmost eagerness and in our love for you. So we want you to excel also in this generous undertaking.
In the spirit of giving. You could, that's the one skill you could level up in. Yeah, I thought this was a little manipulative.
Yeah.
He says in verse 13, you know, like, he's clarifying, our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. Which is great. I love that. That sounds all good.
He's trying to tip the scales a little bit, because when he's talked before about the body being made up of different parts and how they're all necessary and they all have to contribute what their purpose is and all of that, like, he just wants everyone to do what they can and not put too much burden on one part and have it, you know, unequal. And then he says in verse 15, as it is written, the one who had much did not have too much, and the one who had little did not have too little. What a vision, because every, you know, unfair society, just the wild disparity between the haves and the have-nots, like, if we didn't have that extreme polarization, how much better would everybody be, you know?
Yep.
It wouldn't be feasible in this world to eliminate poverty, but to just have it so that people who have little, it's not too little to survive, would be a start, you know?
We all at least have a base of survival.
Yeah, that would be nice. He's not even asking really for them to all be completely equal. He's just saying, like, let's not let anyone have too much or too little.
Right, exactly.
In verse 21, for we intend to do what is right, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of others. And I feel like he brings that up a couple times of, like, looking on the up and up for other people. That's how they keep each other honest, which, as we know, is, like, very much needed in every sphere of life. Is people within any organization, you have to have those checks and balances, so they shouldn't be exempt.
Right. Not the last verse was great. He says, therefore, show these men the proof of your love and the reason for our pride in you, so that the churches can see it. Again, I thought that was very minute. Show them how much you give us your money, because that's what we've been bragging about. You know, don't make us look stupid here. We've been bragging to everybody about how great you are. Now open those pockets. It just sounded like, you know, something you would hear at a fundraiser.
Here's a great seed for that culture of, like, prosperity gospel, of being guilted into, like, handing over your money.
Prove your love by giving money. There, right? The Bible. More money you give, more love you obviously got.
Chapter 9.
I had verse 4 highlighted. I just felt like getting into politics here. Like, I felt like it's getting away from, like, religion and doing good. And it just became this, like, political thing. He says, for if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to say anything about you, would be ashamed of having been so confident. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to visit you in advance and finish the arrangements for the generous gift you promised. Then it will be ready as a generous gift, not as a grudgingly given. Like, it just sounded so ridiculous. Like, he sounds like a politician to me, like, making sure I send these guys before so that when the big guys get there, it looks like you're just handing this check over, just all willing, you know? Like, I felt like you were doing too much preparation, you know, like,
and that's too calculated.
Yeah, too calculated. Like, you know, he's like, you know, talking about how, you know, it's better to give from a giving heart than, you know, like, a grudging heart and stuff. Then let them do that. But, like, here's how forcing them, like, I'm gonna make sure you sign this document saying that you're gonna give us 10,000 correct. That's, you know, like, he's making it so formal and awkward. That,
yeah, like, so that it may be ready as a voluntary gift and not as an extortion. I was shocked to read the word extortion in here.
Oh, yours is, see, mine just at least just says grudgingly given. even worse.
like I'm not extorting you. I need you to sign here.
Your idea. That's what it sounds like he's saying. So this is your idea. You know, I just want to make sure when they get here, it looks like you're just giving this. It's not, we didn't talk about you. You're donating. You were generous enough to offer this stuff.
You could be like, oh, Paul, ye of little faith. You know, like they could have called him out on that. But I do also, there's something about the in-group thing that I like, where he thinks they're not on his spiritual level. So he has to like instruct them, condemn them, make them feel convicted, tell them what they should be doing. And then he's giving them the inside instruction of like, there's something about that conspiracy to look the way they should to the outside world and to all agree on that. And he's giving them the opportunity to do what they should already know to do because they aren't at that spiritual level and they need to level up. There's something I do like about that, even though it is manipulative. He might have just been right about like, this church is like slacking. They need help. And I want them to, you know, come out looking good. And guys, we're all in on this together. Like, let's.
Right. I do like, though, right after that, he goes into saying, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So, like, even the kind of pressing them, he's still being, but just give what you, you know, one, either, you know, God likes a cheerful, you know, I don't want this to be a painful, like, you shouldn't feel like you have to. I don't know, it's almost like a negotiation. Mm-hmm. You should give whatever arrangement, but you know, but at the same time, just give what you're comfortable.
Yeah.
But like, by his words, you know, if I was reading that, I'd be like, well, you know, and I had $1 million, I would be like, well, I definitely need to give more than at least 100. Like he's expecting, you know, like I would.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's not really saying, give us $20,000.
Right.
It's also like, but I know you have enough.
I like reading this. Sowing, if you sow sparingly or bountifully, you're going to reap what you sow. I like thinking of that in a spiritual sense too. Like the more joy and cheer that you sow with, the more of that you're going to reap. So even if you are just giving a tiny amount because that's all you can afford, if you give cheerfully enough, you're going to get rewarded abundantly, even if you can't afford to technically give this abundant, huge gift. Like you're going to feel better about it than someone who is a millionaire and gives away half their money, but they do it under pressure and not really liking that they're doing it. They're not going to feel great. So like, what's the point? They're not going to get any spiritual reward. So they're, you know, reaping sparingly. Chapter 10.
I think this is where I really started to really not like it. Because I think this is also one of my read. I think this is technically maybe like the second letter. Like if they were split in two, I think this is considered like what would be the second, a different letter. Then.
Okay.
I think he gets a little forceful in this chapter.
Yeah.
I had verse 5 highlighted. And then he says, like, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. And we will be ready to punish every act of disobedience once your obedience is complete. This sounds like a cult now. It does, you know, once we beat you into obedience.
Yeah.
Take out all the other people's disobedience. But first, you need to be in line and do what the hell we're saying first, which I also, I just don't like when things are so forcefully. And then he even says, verse 10, he says, for some say his letters are weighty and forceful, but in person he is unimpressive and his speaking amounts to nothing. Some people should realize that what we are in our letters when we are absent, we will be in our actions when we are present. So it's almost like he's like mad that people are saying he's not the greatest orator out there on the block. He also needs to know, when you see me, I'll say these things to your face. It's like he's getting like buck. It almost sounds like he's being very confrontational. Like, yeah, he says, people should realize what we are in our letters when we are absent, we will be in our actions when we are present. If it's not here, you just wait till you see us in person. felt threatening to me when I read it. But now that I'm reading it again, it could also just mean like he's saying he's going to make up for whatever he didn't say in the letter. Maybe, you know, they felt like his letter was missing something. He's just like, well, I'll prove it by my actions. Even in my words, I might not be able to say things in a great Martin Luther King way, but I'll show you. I'll prove it with my actions, maybe. So it doesn't sound as bad, but when I first read it, it sounded very threatening.
Well, I mean, I liked verses 8 and 9. Now, if I boast a little too much of our authority, which the Lord gave for building you up and not for tearing you down, I will not be ashamed of it. I do not want to seem as though I am trying to frighten you with my letters.
Hey, I'm not trying to hurt you with these abusive things. Yeah, I'm not trying to do this, but...
Well, when I think about this movement, I can't call it anything other than a cult. It just grew into this global religion, and they did that by drawing a line in the sand and waging actual war with people. It didn't just spread through peace. This Christianity, this movement, it really did separate people into insiders and outsiders. And even Christ talked in that way sometimes, where you're either with me or against me. And he said both things. He said, anyone who's not against us is with us. But he also said, like, you should be able to cut off anyone in your family if they're not a believer. And like, that is very like black or white. And it's true, because like, life is life or death. Like, you're either on the side of life or you're on the side of death. A lot of times, like, you have to make that decision of like, what is my commitment going to be? What is my perspective going to be? Am I going to have a loving heart or a hateful heart? Like, there's so many lines to be drawn. Mm. And he's saying, like, this is not a joke, and the authority is with God. The thing that makes it okay with me is just that he is so self-deprecating and admits that he might appear weak, and that as long as he keeps saying, like, the power isn't with me, it's, you know, coming from God. I don't know, something about that makes it seem like, okay, he's, you know, trying to do the right thing. He's not making it just about him.
I feel like that's also manipulation. It is him, but he's trying to say it's God. I don't know. I felt like this chapter, he kept trying to push his stuff off as, this is God, you know, I'm just doing this. But I felt like that was his manipulating.
But he doesn't benefit personally from, I don't know if his goal is to be...
I don't know. I
feel canonized, like, in the way he ended up being canonized.
I feel like his goal was, he wanted these people to give him the money. And I felt like he was salty. Like, he was salty that they're starting to follow these other people. And he's like, I didn't hear from the beginning. I started this. And I think even later on, he says something about, like, that's why I only preach in places where there weren't already things going. Like, you know, it's not right for people coming here and poach people out of this.
Yep.
Like, I just feel like he lies. Like, even though he says, like, oh, when I come there, I'm not asking you to give me, or I've never accepted it. It's like he's telling them this stuff, but he really wants it. That's just how I read it. Like, when I come and see you guys, I never ask you for anything, and I'm not expecting you to house me. I'm not a burden. I do everything I can to not be a burden.
But yeah. It's
like, the way he says it makes it feel like he is a little salty about it or something.
Yeah. Well, he is only human. If I had been through what he's been through by this point, maybe it did take him so long of being beaten down and taken for granted that he felt like, I'm denying them some measure of holiness. They could be more righteous by actually rewarding their prophet, and they're not doing it, and they're continuing to be petty, and they might have really been in the wrong and needed this correction. But if he cared so much about his own enrichment, I don't know that he would have gone that long without profiting or without being thanked even. But we're only getting his side. We're only getting his side. So who knows?
Like, I don't see why he also just doesn't go by the Lord's word. And if these people aren't ready to accept it, move on.
So, like, kick the dust off his feet and keep walking.
Why are you still messing with this church? Go somewhere else. Go do. Why are you writing second and third letters to the Corinthians? Go somewhere else.
Because he loves them too much. He's just got to keep loving them into submission. That is true. He could just move on and be like, you guys are a lost cause.
I would just be like, you know what? You guys have had way too, you're not getting it. I'm going to go somewhere else. The people who can, I'm going to stop talking to you like 2-year-olds, because I've been talking to 2-year-olds for 3 years and you're still 2-year-olds.
And I'm tossing my pearls before swine. You guys are the swine. I'm going to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is one approach.
But I did like also verse 12. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. I took that as just stop comparing yourself to other people or measuring whatever you're doing. But like, that makes you a fool. Like, if the only goodness you have is because you think these people are good. Just the idea, yeah, to just stop comparing yourselves is always a good idea, I think, to me. And you should just worry about what you feel is good and do that.
Comparison is the thief of joy. Isn't that what they say?
It is. But at the same time, he wants them to be good so that all the other churches will look at them and want to do what they do too. So
yeah. Every piece of advice he's giving them seems to be rooted in, you know, let God judge us, but we know what God would say. So let's hold ourselves accountable to that. And none of it is about the customs of the day or what another church is doing, other than the money thing.
Other than the money. Eat whatever you want. Yeah. We're coming Saturday. I don't care.
And then it ends verse 18, for it is not those who commend themselves that are approved, but those whom the Lord commends. Chapter 11.
This is when he's talking about that other apostle.
Yeah.
He's starting to follow the false apostle.
It's so funny how I love his humanity peeking out. Mm-hmm. I wish you would bear with me in a little foolishness. He knows he's about to be a little foolish and petty. Right. Do bear with me. I feel a divine jealousy for you. But he's saying our version of Jesus is the correct one right now, but you seem susceptible to other strong leaders who might come and like preach a different one. Yeah. Who might like upend everything I've taught you. So don't let that happen.
He says in verse 5, I do not think I am in the least inferior to those super apostles. That's the term that I'm. I may indeed be untrained as a speaker, but I do have knowledge. We have made this perfectly clear to you in every way. Was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you. Manipulation. That's what I hate that. He's such a jerk. Is, you know, I lowered myself to your level. Was it a sin for me to come down here and try to help you, stupid? Like, it's so insulting to me. But I do like that he admits he's not the greatest speaker.
Yeah.
But I think that's also, he's trying to say, you know, I understand I'm not the greatest speaker, but that mean that someone else who can come in here and use all these fancy words just gonna whisk you away and, you know, you just fall for this new guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was so insulting for him to say, you know, was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? Because that's another thing that I hate when people throw shit in your face. You know, I got off my pedestal to come down here and feed your homely looking ass, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just rude. I don't know. And I just feel like with all the like preaching and all the stuff we've read previously, it's all about, you know, doing stuff without expecting anything. So, you know, and I don't know why I'm saying he robbed this. Because is he saying that it's robbery because he used that money to teach them, but they're so disappointing? And so it's like he robbed them.
I guess because he's accepting support from these other churches when he took so much pride in working for free in this particular church. In order to serve and to work for free for the Corinthians, he had to take from another church, which he may not have had to do if he didn't have to give so much to this one. So he's like basically calling them, like, you guys are beggars. I've given so much of myself and I've had to take, like, you guys made me sell out for your sake. Like, it is heaping more guilt on them. I like that he's just being human and introducing his humanity, because it's like a great reminder to me that all these people are just human.
Move on. Why are you still, he's past this point. You should have been moved on. That's all.
Yeah. But if he had moved on, maybe these churches wouldn't have become what they did. Like, the religion wouldn't have become what it did.
Or maybe it would have been greater because he wouldn't have wasted so many years right into
that's true. We don't know. He might have moved on to a much better church. Or I don't know. But at least, at the very least, he said, I'm about to be foolish and hear me out.
That's true. So he's self-aware. We can give him that. He boasts a lot about his sufferings, trying to spread the gospels. He's been through so much, beatings and escaping death and all kinds. It's like he does this thing where he's like, if I were to boast, this is what I would boast about, and rattles off all this stuff that, you know, he did.
He's condemning other false apostles for boasting themselves and being deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ and saying, I want to deny them an opportunity to be recognized as our equals. And even, this is in verse 14, and no wonder even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light, mm-hmm. calling all these other pastors like false prophets, basically. There's no room for other interpretations of the gospel.
Yeah, no, it's my way or the highway. then he's also mad at them because I guess they haven't gone through the persecution and the stuff that he's gone through. Like, they're just coming in here. Like, he's already started all this. He's from the ground up. And then there's these guys just coming in here. Be like, all right, well, actually, this is this. And they haven't had all the persecutions. He says in, like, verse 23, are they servants of Christ? I am out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in a danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger in falls. Like when your parents are talking about how they had to walk 5 miles in the snow.
Yep. Hardcore laying it on thick, all the guilt tripping.
And this is all before him being like, I shouldn't boast about this. And I'm only boasting to let you know. It's like, you know. But he says, I get it. At this point, I understand. He's fed up. He has gone through all this. And he's annoyed that this outcome isn't more fruitful.
It's weird because we're almost reading more about his ongoing suffering than Christ himself. It's right? Almost like he's having this persecution without the satisfaction of a group of people following him around and protecting him. And maybe he does have all that stuff, but he's like leaning more into his persecution. But I also felt that humanity coming out of Christ sometimes too, when he would reach a limit of like, gosh, aren't you guys going to stop bothering me for instructions on how to do these miracles? Like, leave me alone. And like, he would kind of get exasperated sometimes of like feeling put upon by people. It's just that he didn't lean in so much to like guilt tripping about his suffering. And then the ultimate suffering came at the end when he couldn't really, I guess he didn't come back and just complain about that. But maybe Paul just went through 10 times as much throughout his life without even a fraction of the worship that there, you know.
He wasn't the chosen one.
Which maybe he has a chip on his shoulder about he's having all the persecution without the praise. And that would kind of send anybody off the deep end a little bit. Chapter 12.
This is also interesting. Again, this is where I don't like Paul again. Because now he's talking about how he's so high and mighty. He's like, I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. I think he's talking about himself. Like, he's trying to say he made it up to, I don't even know. Like, we've never talked about levels of heaven before, so I don't know what.
Yeah, that was weird to read. The third heaven? You think he's talking about himself, even though he says he doesn't know whether it was an in-body or out-of-body experience?
Mm-hmm. Talking about visions and revelations from the Lord. So I feel like he's talking about that he had. And he's like, I must go on boasting. Although there is nothing to be gained, I will go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. And then he starts telling about, you know, I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know. But God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell. I don't know. It just sounded like all of this.
I have a friend who went through this.
Yeah. And then it's also like, you know, he did these things, but I can't tell you what those things were, but I know them. Like, you know, like it's like a trick, you know, like I've been this place, but I can never even tell you what happened. You know, like I can never let you know, like, did you go to third heaven? Did you?
Yeah. And then he brags about the fact that he won't brag about himself. He's saying, on behalf of such a one, I will boast, but right. On my own behalf, I will not boast except of my weakness. And right. Goes into how much he loves his own weakness. And verse 10, therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong.
Yeah, I like that, though.
Yeah, I do. I love that.
But yeah, I think he's talking about himself.
That's interesting. He, like, split off his ego into these two halves. One should be able to boast.
Right, because he can't boast about himself, so he has to create this other person.
Right. I know this guy. You guys will never meet him, but I know him. And trust me, he's really holy.
I know he would not lie about this because I am him, but I'm telling you.
But I guess that's preferable to him just bragging about having gone to heaven and knowing all this.
I guess,
even though he's taking this superior stance of like, I'm too holy to brag about myself.
That's right.
I do like that he keeps mentioning these super apostles that he obviously is jealous of and has said that he's jealous of, but he still keeps saying, for I am not at all inferior.
Right.
Even though I am nothing. I'm more nothing than they are. I'm more humble. You know? I mean, Yeah, I get kind of, I see people in life who are like, I don't think they're better than me at certain things. They're just more confident and forceful about what they do, and they believe in themselves more in whatever they're selling. Yeah, I get really resentful of that, of like, I'm not inferior to them. But then I start thinking I am so much better because I don't have that confidence or something. Like, they are so haughty and arrogant. But then I get arrogant and thinking that because I'm not, I'm so much better. And I'm just this undiscovered, brilliant, talented person who I'm not any worse. I'm nothing, but we're all nothing. Like, I want everyone to think that they're nothing so that I can have a chance, you know?
Everyone should stop being.
Yeah, like, nobody be confident, please.
The only thing you're where you are is because you think you believe in yourself. Stop believing.
Yeah. We could all agree to just not believe in ourselves. That would be great. But that drive, even if you're a scam artist and your craft is not, you know, what you say it is, like, that drive will get you places.
Yeoman, America's done it for how long now? We do that.
Yeah, America itself is a sham, but we've like climbed to the top of the heap somehow.
Well, yeah, it's only now starting to come. Yeah. Held that train for a long, long time.
He ends this whole chapter 12 with admonishing them not to continue in what they've been doing. He's like, in verses 19 and 20, have you been thinking all along that we have been defending ourselves before you? We are speaking in Christ before God. Everything we do, beloved, is for the sake of building you up. For I fear that when I come, I may find you not as I wish, and that you may find me not as you wish. I fear that there may be perhaps quarreling, jealousy, anger, selfishness, slander, gossip, conceit, and disorder. And he's saying in 21, I fear that when I come again, my God may humble me before you, and that I may have to mourn over many who previously sinned and have not repented of the impurity, sexual immorality, and licentiousness that they have practiced. So get yourselves together. I'm writing you this letter. If I come back and find you still acting up, I'm going to be embarrassed in front of you. Like, I'm not going to look like a good leader. You guys aren't going to look good. Like, we're not going to enjoy looking at each other in this shame. And yeah, like you were saying, I guess he could choose to have faith and move on and write them off. And he's trying so hard to like control what they do with the teachings. Yeah. But I still see that as like you're investing in this wayward child and you're trying so hard. And there's something good in that, but it's still like,
read it. That's all. Follow it. Just do it.
Yeah. And he does seem to be getting off a little bit on the fact that he's having to do this. Like, don't make me correct you again. But it's like, if you weren't enjoying it, you wouldn't be doing it over and over. Maybe you would move on.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like he wants to be a part of this drama.
He likes being the holy functional one.
Right.
Chapter 13, which is called Further Warning. He's just warning them more.
Yeah, this is my favorite Paul right here. This will be my third visit to you. Every matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. I already gave you a warning when I was with you the second time. I now repeat it while absent. On my return, I will not spare those who sinned earlier or any of the others. Sounds very threatening. And he says, since you are demanding proof that Christ is speaking through me. So again, this is why I don't like him either. They're asking for something that I feel like is a valid thing to ask for. And he's saying, I'm going to kill you. How dare you ask me for proof? Instead, obey me before I come down there, you know?
But it's like, obey the Christ in me.
No, obey.
Since you desire proof that Christ is speaking in me, he is not weak in dealing with you, but is powerful in you. I mean,
didn't like it. Sounds very threatening. This is not how I would get people to do what I want them to do.
But think about the character of Yahweh, if you will, saying, obey me, love me, or it's eternal death. It's life or death. I will kill you. You will die. Maybe he really cares that they don't perish. And he's like, you guys, you're messing with death. Like, come on.
Maybe. I don't know. Something about it strikes me as odd.
Well, it strikes me as odd too. Like, I can only appreciate it in an abstract sense. But yeah, I mean, in my mind, this is just a guy. But I like to believe that he is trying to get them to stay accountable to something bigger, and he really does care about that more than his own ego. But the minute that I think about it coming from the creator of the universe, I see that as like way more manipulative, petty, evil, psychopathic, like I've said before. Like, I can't imagine someone who's all powerful having that same stance, but I can imagine a human being like, come on, guys, like, get it together. We're gonna die. But then the creator has the power to prevent that, but he's still like, do what I say or die.
I don't know. God also human, according to the word.
Like Yahweh's human?
Yeah, is also human, right?
Not in the, not if you were to believe the story of it, no. I think it's supposed to be the creator of everything, the all-powerful being. Yeah, like, I think they personify the spirit.
We're also created in his image, which would mean he has to be also human.
Yeah, but, human. Right, but what kind of human would that be, you know? That would be a really...
The kind that you like.
The kind I like?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like psychopaths.
No, I mean, like Paul, because you like Paul telling them to do all this.
Well, because he is human, in my mind. I only like him because he's actually human. Like, but if somebody claims that there's this all-powerful figure who is all-powerful, like, either you're human or you're all-powerful, and you can't be both, you know?
I think he can be both, see? I don't know, I think he could be both. I think that's why he's all-powerful, because he can be both.
Oh, okay.
He and she, they can be both.
Hmm. Yeah, and then verse 10, I write these things while I'm away from you so that when I come, I may not have to be severe in using the authority that the Lord has given me for building up and not for tearing down. So he does seem like, he keeps reminding them, like, I have this power of leadership over you, and this like power of Christ compels me, but I don't want to tear you down. Like, take care of this before I have to see you in person.
Because when I see you in person, I just want to party. Because that's what he says almost. He says, yeah, finally, brothers and sisters, rejoice. Strive for full restoration. Encourage one another. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace will be with you. That's a very final greeting. Yeah, let's all get together in peace and love.
So how did you feel us just talking about it now in comparison to reading it? Did you like him even less while going over it?
Not less. I would say, if anything, I might have given him a certain thing that I really didn't like. I could give him a little bit more of a pass, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Or I can give a bit of a doubt, like the whole thing with him talking about where I thought he was getting up, you know, where he was like, I'm going to be the same offline as I am online. I could see it in another way now, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. He might not have necessarily been trying to be confrontational like that. But I still hated him.
I get it.
See, I don't know. Anytime I think when I feel there's not enough balance between the forcefulness and then just naturally let things happen, that's what I don't like. And then I felt like it was unbalanced, like it was too forced. So I just felt like it was a very different Paul. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like this. I could understand that maybe it's very different because, like you said, maybe, you know, he's fed up at this point, or he's been trying to be nice to them for so long, and this is like his kind of like snapping point, or I just felt like it just wasn't in line with everything that was previously being said, and I liked what was previously being said more.
Right, yeah, and we would like to see him definitely having a more like faithful approach of like washing his hands of the outcome more, I guess. Yeah,
if I was someone trying to get into this church or become a Christian, I would more likely be a Christian if he was just more faithful or seemed more, less involved.
Yeah.
Because if your God is all powerful and this and that, then like my non-believing ass isn't going to stop this. So
I have kind of a word of faith, I think.
Oh, good. Please share.
You know, the other day I saw someone use a phrase on Reddit that was a spiritual bypass, the idea that you can use spirituality and spiritual terms to bypass other vital things like your emotional development, your accountability to other people, you know, your actual stuff that you need to work on. You can bypass all of that by being a super spiritual person and feel superior in that. And it's kind of a Buddhist idea, apparently, too, the idea of spiritual bypass, like a Zen idea. So it can lead to things like compulsive kindness or being taken advantage of, being a doormat, or other things like being holier than thou, all these harmful things that it can like really impede your development. And as we're talking about Paul, I'm thinking, you know, he was kind of using his identity as an apostle to maybe shield him from a certain humility that he could have had as like just a man of the people and like a member of the church. And like, he didn't maybe need to excuse himself so much from the work of like being better to these people. Maybe they did have valid issues with him, his ego, you know?
Right.
So I have to think about, I truly believe that I'm a human who is just among other humans, but then I'm so obsessed with being righteous and all this stuff that I completely miss out on actually just being
human.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess in my ongoing effort, but at the same time, I'm trying to have all these new boundaries and protect my peace and my time and all that. So it's like doing both at once. I guess I'll be meditating on that and looking for opportunities to not spiritually bypass and not consider myself above it all to the point where I alienate people.
All right. That's great. That sounds deep. I guess maybe for me, since I guess the thing that was most prominent for me reading this was that I just felt that Paul was so controlling or too forceful with things. So then maybe what I'll take from it is, I don't know, you know, they say that like what you see in other people, you know, the characteristics, that's what you don't like about yourself. So maybe since that was something that was so, maybe, I don't know. I don't think of myself as controlling, but, you know, maybe... Yeah, you have some tendencies maybe to over control. I don't know. So maybe just also trying to let things go more and not being too hands-on things. But I don't know. I guess with everything, you know, it's got to be a fine balance. I don't want to completely just be like, oh, give it up. So I don't know. Maybe tapping in and just being more in tune with when I feel like things are being forced. And then maybe using that as a point to let go of certain things or to just back away or not push, maybe just,
yeah,
I guess maybe that's going to be my thing, trying to hone in on this skill or define or maybe more fine-tune these points where things go from in line or naturally or harmoniously occurring versus me forcing this to happen or me pushing for a certain outcome.
That's good.
Yeah,
good.
But I also don't know, and I feel like nowadays too, I don't know, I just feel like being stuck in the house, these opportunities don't come as much.
Well, it kind of is a big opportunity because we're having to let go of so much. Like, there is less and less that we can control, so there is more opportunity maybe to be swept away or follow wavelengths that maybe you wouldn't be able to do a 12-hour meditation session, but now you can. Just one stupid example, you know, like, I have thought about too, like, do I have issues with control? And a lot of times, like, we can't be hard on ourselves or think like a controlling person is a tyrant or whatever. Like,
right.
A lot of times we go through trauma or have been taken advantage of or hurt to such a degree that we want to control things around us so that doesn't happen again. A lot of times it can come from a place of like vulnerability, and it's not that you're a bully or a tyrant. It's just that you don't want to hurt in the same way. So you want to control the environment around you. Like, I can totally relate to that for sure.
Definitely. But yeah, I don't think it's always a bad thing necessarily.
Right.
Especially if it's personal, you know, like controlling your environment, you know, your living, mm-hmm. your things like that. But being protective of who comes in and out of your, you know, stuff like
yeah.
that can be good. I guess it's basically what I said. Maybe just a little bit more balanced to, you know, letting shit happen, but also controlling what you can, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Controlling what you can, letting go of what you can't.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, yeah. Next book will be what, Galatians?
Yeah, we're getting into the shorter ones now.
Woo!
Yeah, I don't know. Are all of these just letters?
I guess so. Pretty much, yeah. Paul was on to something because he certainly made himself the centerpiece of like right. the rest of the Bible.
Yeah, that's nicer to the Galatians.
We'll see.
So maybe they were much better performing and in their obedience.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone listening. BCBibleStudy.com, BCBSPodcast@gmail.com. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. We will keep on trucking.
Yep.
And we'll see you in 2 Sabbaths with more Black Chicks Bible Study.